Our study tonight is out of Acts chapter 24, verses 1 to 23, Overcoming Powerful Slander by Godly Living. The book of Acts explains the orderly and sovereignly directed progress of the kingdom message from Jews to Gentiles and from Jerusalem to Rome. So we can learn a lot about aligning our ministry efforts with God's sovereign work from studying the book of Acts. Acts 24, 1 to 23 records how Paul faced powerful slander by his Hebrew enemies that was designed to incite the Roman procurator Felix against Paul due to their claim of Paul's alleged trouble for the Romans themselves. Paul overcame the strong slander by godly living, so we view the passage for our insight and our application. I'd like to read the verses. It's just 23 verses there, the first of 23 verses of chapter 24. And after 5 days, Ananias, the high priest, descended from Jerusalem to Caesarea with the elders, and with a certain orator named Tertullus, who informed the governor against Paul. When Paul was called forth, Tertullus began to accuse him, saying, "Seeing that by thee we enjoy great quietness, and that very worthy deeds are done unto this nation by thy providence, we accept it always and in all places, most noble Felix, with all thankfulness. Notwithstanding that I be not further tedious unto thee, I pray thee that thou wouldest hear us of thy clemency a few words. For we have been found this man a pestilent fellow, and mover of sedition among them all the Jews throughout much of the world, and a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes, who also has gone about to profane the temple, whom we took and we would have judged according to our law. But the chief captain, Lysias, came upon us, and with great violence took him away out of our hands, commanding his accusers to come unto thee, by examining of whom thyself mayest take knowledge of all these things, whereof we accuse him. And the Jews also assented, saying that these things were so. Then Paul, after that the governor had beckoned unto him to speak, answered, "For as much as I know that thou hast been of many years a judge unto this nation, I do the more cheerfully answer for myself, because that thou mayest understand that there are yet but 12 days since I went up to Jerusalem for to worship. And they neither found me in the temple disputing with any man, neither raising up the people, neither in the synagogues nor in the city. Neither can they prove the things whereof they now accuse me. But this I confess unto thee, that after the way, which they call a heresy or a cult, so worship I the God of my fathers, believing all the things which are written in the law and in the prophets, and have hope toward God, which they themselves also allow, that there shall be a resurrection from the dead, both of the just and the unjust. And herein I do exercise myself to have always a conscience void of offense toward God and toward men. Now after many years I came to bring alms to my nation and offerings, whereupon certain Jews from Asia found me purified in the temple, neither with multitude nor with tumult, who ought to have been here before thee and object, if they had aught against me. Or else let the same here say, if they have found any evil doing in me while I stood before the Sanhedrin, except it be for this one voice, that I cried standing among them touching the resurrection from the dead, for I am called in question by you this day." And when Felix had heard these things, having a more perfect knowledge of the way, that would be Christianity, he deferred them and said, "When Lysias, the chief captain, shall come down to Caesarea, I will know the uttermost of your matter." And he commanded a centurion to keep Paul and to let him have liberty, and that he should forbid none of his acquaintances to minister or to come unto him. Now, up to this point in his ministry, Paul had faced opposition over the different way that he viewed the teachings of the Old Testament than did many in Judaism. That had been a problem. But he had not faced the serious charge of insurrection against the Roman government itself. However, all that changed in this case before Felix. In other words, this criticism, this slander is getting very, very intense, because if this would have gotten the ears of Felix in a hurry, because this guy, they say, he's trying to raise up an insurrection against Rome. Okay, that's going to bring on the wrath of Rome. So they're not just talking about a disagreement amongst Jews. He's talking about somebody who's going after the city of Rome and after the empire of Rome. Well, after Paul had been transferred from Jerusalem to Caesarea to be tried before Judea's procurator, Felix, Israel's high priest Ananias, with the elders and a man named Tertullus, came down from Jerusalem to level charges against Paul. Tertullus, that's his Roman name, was probably a lawyer hired by the Jews in Caesarea to present their case. When Paul was summoned, Tertullus extensively flattered Felix to try to sway his judgment. Now, most manuscripts do not contain a concluding sentence of verse 6, all of verse 7, or an opening phrase of verse 8. So I'm going to refer only to verse 5, verse 6a, and verse 8b. In other words, if there's a questionable reading, we don't preach out of that. We preach only on the passages that all the manuscripts agree on. And we note that Tertullus charged Paul with being, number one who stirs up riots among all the Jews throughout the world, the word world being rendered in the Greek term oikoumene, which is a technical term for the Roman Empire. In other words, this man has been stirring up Jews throughout the Roman Empire. Notice the emphasis on Paul's challenge to the Roman Empire. And he's a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. The word sect almost carries the connotation of a cult. Okay, who tried to profane the temple. That's the third charge. So you got three charges here. The first charge, he's stirring up riots amongst the Jews throughout the Roman Empire. He's a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes, and he had tried to profane the temple. Now, Felix knew very well about the Christian faith at this point. He had been a judge in Israel, so he knew all the things that were going on. He knew about the practices and the culture of Israel, because he'd been a judge of the lower case, and now he's been moved into the case of procurator. Tertullus stated that by Felix's own examination of Paul, he would find these charges to be true. And the Hebrews with Tertullus gave verbal testimony that the charges made by Tertullus were true. Now, this is interesting. They actually sunk their own boat at this point. They said, just listen to him himself. You can gauge from him himself that, you know, he's wrong. So this puts the ball entirely in the court of the Apostle Paul. Now, Felix then motioned for Paul to speak. He probably went like this with both hands to Paul, so Paul would just speak. And when he motioned for Paul to speak, Paul said that he cheerfully made his defense, since he knew Felix had been judge in Israel for many years and could thus discern the truth on the matters of his case. Now, Paul's defense was to present the simple truth about his godly actions, showing that he could not be convicted of insurrection against Rome, nor with the Hebrews' charge of trying to profane the temple. Now, he did admit to being a Christian. We'll get into that. But anyway, Paul stated that Felix himself could verify that it had not been more than 12 days since he had first gone up to worship at the Jerusalem temple. Now, that's interesting. That claim, along with Felix's knowledge that 5 days had elapsed since Paul had arrived in Caesarea, according to Acts 24:1, meant that a mere week had elapsed since Paul had arrived in Jerusalem, and a week is hardly enough time to stir up a riotous insurrection against the Roman Empire. You don't just come into Jerusalem as a stranger or someone who doesn't have contact there, and in 7 days cause a tremendous insurrection to rise up against the nation of Rome. It's ridiculous, and Felix would know that as well. Paul added that no one had found him in the temple disputing with anyone, nor stirring up the people in the synagogues or in the city, nor that any charge of insurrection against him could be proved. See, if you're going to get an insurrection, you're going to be active in the synagogues, you're going to be active in the city square, you're going to be all doing all that. Paul didn't do that. All he did was go into the temple. He was going in there to pay for the offerings of the guys who were giving up their vows, the Nazarene vows. Nazarite vows. That's all he did. It was the critics of Paul who had come from Asia who had stirred up this whole mess. However, Paul did confess that he upheld the way, and that's what Christianity is called at this point in the book of Acts, the way, that his accusers called a sect, but that it involved worshiping God of the Hebrew nation's fathers, believing everything laid down by the law and the prophets, having a hope in which his Hebrew accusers themselves accepted, a hope in the resurrection of the just and the unjust, what Paul had always conscientiously upheld before God and man. Now remember, Felix would know about this. He knew about the Pharisees who believed in resurrection. The Sadducees didn't. They didn't believe in any of that. They didn't angels, didn't believe in miracles. But he knew good and well about the Pharisees. So Paul is telling him this information. Felix says, oh, you're a Pharisee. Okay, I got you. And Paul says, I do everything out of defense of the Old Testament. I've got nothing to hide. And if the leaders there had charged him, no, you don't. And Paul would have loved to just gone right through the Old Testament and showed how the Christian faith is based right out of the Old Testament. You go to Isaiah 53, Psalm 110:1. Let's go. He was all ready for them. Very interesting. Paul then told how the riot in the temple had occurred when he had brought alms and presented an offering, and some Hebrews from Asia had raised objections about him. And Paul declared that they were the ones who really should have been present before Felix to bring their charges against him. Now that's accurate. Paul says if they have a problem with me, they're the ones who should be. They're not here. But I'm willing to have them come down. Give them a charge. Let them charge against me. See, everything Paul's doing here, he's being extremely honest. He's completely above board. He doesn't have anything to hide. And Felix is getting the impression that Paul's telling the truth. There's something about the truth that it rings. It rings. You know it's true. And that's what's happening here. Paul added that the Hebrews present with Tertullus should bring charges, if they had any, for what Paul did in that Sanhedrin. And all he had done there was to cry out in favor of the resurrection of the dead. Now, Tertullus knew that you had Sadducees as well as Pharisees in the Sanhedrin, and somebody in the Sanhedrin calling out and shouting out, I'm here on the defense of the resurrection. He knew good and well that that would create a ruckus between the Sadducees and the Pharisees. And, of course, it makes sense that there would have been a riotous reaction there. So when Felix had heard Paul's argument, knowing rather accurately about Christianity, he postponed making a ruling that would be unfavorable to the religious leaders, for he recognized that Paul was innocent. So he didn't want to make these religious leaders, including the high priest, look bad in public in a ruling, because that would be, you know, that could create its own problem. So he said, well, I'm going to postpone the ruling. Now we know that he sided with Paul because of what happened next. Felix then gave Paul a lot of liberty following the hearing. He still had to hold him as a prisoner. But he said, let, you know, any friend that he wants, let him come. See? Felix knew that Paul was innocent. So the lesson is, when strongly slandered by his foes, Paul merely reported on the verifiable facts about his godly actions. That's an incredibly simple, but it's an incredibly profound thing. There's a tendency when we face slander is to butter up the truth a little bit because we're a little scared and we want to make sure that people believe that which is right. That's the worst thing in the world to do. The best thing to do is what Paul did. Tell the simple truth. Don't butter up. Just lay it out there. So to counter strong slander in ministry, may we always function in godliness and tell the simple truth. After the worship service this morning, I had someone come and talk to me. They were concerned about, they have a friend or an associate who's a school teacher in a public school. And what's happening in the public school now, there are kids that are coming up, like say boys, they want to be referred to by the feminine genders. They have to refer to him as her and she. And girls, some of them, they want to be referred as he and him, whatnot. And she said that this teacher is a Christian, and he's having a terrible time. It's a male teacher, terrible time trying to, with a clear conscience, call a girl by male pronouns and boy by female pronouns just because they want to, and to keep it all straight. And so this person came to me and said, "What do you think the person should do?" Well, I pointed out in the sermon this morning, we preached out of Deuteronomy chapter 22, verse 5, where God indicates that he abhors cross-dressing and cross-dressers. So I pointed out, if God abhors cross-dressing, can we get by with cross-addressing? You know, that's a weird way, addressing a person the wrong way. And obviously, no. And the cross-dressing was done at a time when culturally the dress of men and the dress of women is very close. So God really wanted to make sure that you're dressing like a man, and if you're a woman, that you're dressing like a woman. And make sure it's not even slightly like a man if you're a woman, and if you're a man, that it's not even slightly like a woman if you're a man. Keep it distinct that way. So I pointed that out, and I thought, you know, there comes a point where if you're going to be asked to do something that is sinful to keep your job, you can't sin. And if it means losing the job, okay, or getting another job, you have to go that route. I mean, we would think of it this way. Would we keep our job by committing murder? Of course not. You want to keep your job by committing immorality? Of course not. Well, there's something else that God abhors. And that's with this whole gender stuff and homosexuality and whatnot. God abhors that. And if that's the case, we can't do that. I don't know why a Christian wouldn't have the right just to go ahead and use the pronouns that fit the birth gender of the child. And if there's a problem, if he loses his job, take him to court. Say it's a violation of my religious liberty. You know, I have religious persuasions in regards to this. Why do I have to yield on that? I don't know. Maybe someday there's going to be a test case on that and it'll get to the Supreme Court. It'll be interesting to see what happens. But the best thing for us to do is to tell the truth. And as believers, we have to live it. Because Paul had focused on living the truth before this whole situation rose, this court case. So he had nothing to hide. And it worked in his favor. In fact, later on we're going to find out when Felix and Agrippa get together, the men are going to agree when Paul appeals to Rome, that if he hadn't appealed to Rome, he probably might have been set free. Because he had really done nothing wrong, even according to these Roman rulers. So living the truth and telling the truth is extremely important. It's the best thing that we can do because it protects us in the long run. It may not create a positive feedback immediately, but if we're living the truth and if we're telling the truth, in the long run, we're going to come way out ahead. When people find out that there is a bad character that we're fostering by not living the truth and not telling the truth, it goes a lot worse for us than if we come right up front and tell the truth. Years ago, I was in a court case. One of the women in the first church where I pastored had been kidnapped by a gunman and held it. A gunman, and he had forced her to drive from Nebraska over into Iowa. She finally managed to escape, thank God, and unharmed. And she was able to call her husband on a phone, a landline there, and the police came and captured the man. And anyway, I was a character witness in the court case. And I had been asked to testify in regards to something. And at one particular point, I had been quoted on a statement that I had made. And I said, you know, I made that statement, but I'm not sure about the reality of that. I'm not sure about that. And so the lawyers kind of bantered back and forth. I said, look, I'm just trying to be sure with you. I did say that, but I'm not sure that that's actually accurate upon second thought. Well, at that point, the judge, he says, I have a question for you. And I thought, oh, boy, here goes. But he turned to me, and he was a very educated man, and he said, I want to know what would happen. This woman who had been kidnapped, he mentioned, he said, if there's the presence of a gun in a stressful situation like that, would that be a high stress, a medium stress, or a low stress situation for her? And I said, in this particular case, the presence of a gun, she had come from parents who were Mennonites and everything. Mennonites are, you know, very close to the gun. I said it would be a very stressful situation. I was emphatic on that. And the judge accepted it. That's what he was looking for. But the reason he asked is because I was trying to be honest about admitting that I had made a mistake in a statement that I made earlier. And since I was trying to be honest there in the court, he sensed it. So he says, all right, I want to ask you this question. I'm interested in this. And it made a big difference and helped in regards to the court case. So I learned that way. The best thing when you get into court, tell the truth. Absolute truth. And if you fudge somewhere else earlier, or you made a judgment, or you made a statement that you're really not sure of, be honest. Let the judge know. Let the lawyers know. Because once your credibility is questioned and thrown up, and they find out that you're not quite telling the truth, you lose all credit. All of your witnessing is something that is lost. So the best thing to do is tell the truth and live it. And if we do that, we'll save ourselves a lot of trouble and we'll be a good testimony for the Lord.